The sun sank toward the western horizon as the buggy rolled toward it.
Do either of you want to tell me what's going on here?
I reckon you do deserve an explanation. Me and Beaumont are old enemies, even though we didn't ever actually meet until about a week and a half ago. He's been sending folks to the Rockies for the past year or so, trying to take over the fur trade out there. And I've been stopping those plans.
So, you're a mountain man?
Yeah. I just shaved off my beard and dressed in regular clothes instead of buckskins to make Beaumont think I was somebody else. I told him my name was Jim Donnelly. You believe me?
Then there really isn't a Jim Donnelly?
Well, now, I reckon there must be at least one fella named Matt somewhere, but I ain't him.
If you hate Beaumont, why did you go to work for him? Oh, I know. You were trying to get inside his organization so you could destroy it and get back at him for all the bad things he's done.
Yeah, that's about the size of it. Problem is, it never did work out quite like I figured it would. I reckon I just ain't cut out for play acting.
It would have worked if we'd had more time. We just didn't count on that bastard Garland Buckhalter showing up and recognizing you.
That was his first name? Garland? I don't reckon I ever heard it till now. Expected to see that varmint again, either. I figured the Pawnee got him.
He came into the house about an hour ago. Brutus heard him talking to some of the girls. He said he'd been out on the plains for the past couple of weeks, on foot, dodging Indians. He was finally able to steal a horse yesterday, and that meant he was able to get the rest of the way to St. Louis a lot faster.
Yeah, probably killed the fella he stole that horse from, too.
More than likely. He also did a lot of talking about you, Preacher. Mostly about how you had ruined all his plans and caused him to fail Beaumont. And how he was gonna kill you if he ever saw you again. Brutus overheard that and warned me. And I told him that if you came in, he should keep you away from the parlor until Buckhalter was safely upstairs with one of the girls.
He did his best. He just didn't have any luck.
Not this time. Brutus's luck ran out, and so did ours.
Now we're still alive, ain't we? I'd say we still got some luck on our side.
We're alive, but Brutus isn't. He was a good man. He helped me a lot over the past couple of years, since Shad put me in charge of the house.
And before that?
Before that, I was just one of the whores who worked there. Is that what you wanted to know, Preacher?
No, I didn't mean nothing by it.
I know. You don't strike me as the judgmental sort.
Anyway, I'm obliged to you for shooting Buckhalter. I reckon you probably saved my life.
Oh. I saw Beaumont and Buckhalter about to shoot you, and I didn't even really think about what I was doing. I just lifted my gun and pulled the trigger.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you did.
So am I. I would have hated it if anything happened to Preacher. I'm glad you shot that man Buckhalter, Jesse.
I was aiming at Shad. I'm afraid I'm not a very good shot with a pistol.
As dusk was settling down over the landscape west of St. Louis, Preacher directed Jesse toward the grove of trees where Uncle Dan was camped, while he kept an eye on their back trail for any signs of pursuit. It was almost completely dark by the time they reached the place.
Uncle Dan! It's me, Preacher! You in there?
Come ahead, boy! I heard the buggy coming, but I didn't know who 'twas.
Uncle Dan stepped out of the trees as Jesse drove up to the grove. The dog followed him, a ghostly gray shape in the shadows. Uncle Dan had his rifle in his hands, ready to use it if he needed to. Preacher hopped down from the buggy.
Plans all blow to hell.
Yeah, I figured as much when I seen you had somebody with you. Hey, ladies, your company is right welcome.
We're hardly ladies.
Hey, the way I figure it, any woman is a lady until she proves otherwise, and that starts from when I meet her. Anything that happened before don't matter one little bit.
Well, aren't you the gentleman?
Well, somebody's got to be, since Preacher's rough as a cob most of the time.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
Both women climbed out of the buggy.
I think Jim is very nice. I mean, Preacher is very nice. It's gonna take me some time to get used to the fact that you're really not Jim Donnelly, Preacher.
Well, that's fine. I don't much care what folks call me.
As long as it ain't late for dinner. Speaking of which, I'll rustle up some victuals. I got bacon to fry and a mess of biscuits I cooked up earlier today. I reckon I must have had a feeling somebody was coming. These old bones of mine are pretty good about that, you know.
Don't you want to hear about what happened in town?
Any hostiles directly on your trail?
Not that I know of.
It can wait then. If there's trouble, folks tend to think straighter when they got a full belly and some coffee to drink.
As Uncle Dan led the women into the trees, Casey noticed Dog for the first time.
Is that a wolf?
Preacher took the reins of the buggy horse to lead the animal into the woods.
No, that's just Dog. Here, hold your hand out and let him sniff it.
I'm not so sure about that. He looks like he could bite it right off.
Oh, he won't. Dog, come on now, these are friends. Jesse and Casey, they're friends.
One by one, they let Dog sniff their hands. That big old cur's bushy tail began to swish back and forth.
There you go. You're safe from him now. He'll never forget your scent, and he'll die to protect you if I tell him to.
I hope it won't ever come to that.
Preacher unhitched the buggy horse and picketed it near Uncle Dan's saddle mount and the pack horses. Meanwhile, the old-timer prepared supper over a small, almost invisible fire. When the food was ready, the four of them gathered around the embers to eat.
All right. Now you can tell me what happened.
Preacher proceeded to do so, telling Uncle Dan about how he had fallen in with the campaign being waged against Beaumont by Jesse and Cleve. He drew a startled gasp from the old-timer when he mentioned Buckhalter being alive and explained about running into the renegade wagon master at Jesse's place.
When he recognized me, that torch. There was some gunplay, and that fellow Brutus who worked for Miss Jesse wound up dead, along with Buckhalter. Beaumont busted out through a window and got away.
So the polecat's still alive?
Yeah, he is as far as I know.
That ain't good. Beaumont's so full of hate, he'll have to come after the three of you. He'll figure you double-crossed him, and he has to even the score.
That's exactly the way he'll react.
Question is, will he send a bunch of hired killers after us, or will he come along too?
I think there's at least a chance he'll come after us himself. Along with as many men as he can gather up, of course. He'll want the odds overwhelmingly on his side.
Yeah, I was sort of hoping you'd say that. If Beaumont just sends men after us, Uncle Dan and I are right back where we started. But if he comes along too, then we might be able to turn that to our advantage.
I don't understand. What makes you say that?
St. Louis is Beaumont's stomping ground. But once he gets out of town, then he's in territory that's more to my liking.
He'll try to recruit some experienced frontiersmen to come along.
There ain't no frontiersman better than Preacher. Shoot, I'm a lot older than he is, but I bet he's forgot more about surviving out here than I ever know.
Oh, hell, I wouldn't go that far. But if I gotta fight Beaumont in an army, I'd rather do it out away from town.
That makes sense. You won't be fighting that army alone, though. You have the three of us.
No. I want Uncle Dan to take you two gals and get you as far away from here as he can and as fast as he can.
What? You can't?
Preacher, no!
Now hold on! I could do a better job of fighting Beaumont if I know you two are safe.
Forget it. We have plenty of reason to hate Shad, too. You can't just send us away, Preacher.
And what about me? I thought we was going after Beaumont together.
Well, yeah, that's the way it started out, but things have changed. It's more important now for you to look after Jesse and Casey.
We don't need looking after.
I want to help you, Preacher. I want to see Beaumont get what's coming to him.
Oh, he's going to get what's coming to him, all right. You got my word on that. No matter what else happens, Beaumont's a dead man.
But what if you end up the same way?
Well, some things are worth the price, I reckon. I'm hoping it'll be safe enough for the three of you to stay here tonight so I can find you later.
What? Where in blazes are you going?
I'm going back to St. Louis.
Back to St. Louis? What in blue blazes for?
Horse, for one thing. He's still in the stable behind Beaumont's house, I reckon. That big fella and me been trail partners for long enough that I just can't abandon him. For another thing, if I'm going to be fighting a whole army, I want my own rifle and my own other pistol. And they're in the servants' quarters at Beaumont's.
How in the world do you intend to do that? You can't expect Shad to just let you waltz in and take those things.
I don't. I'm a pretty fair hand at sneaking in and out of places.
You'll need to be better than a fair hand. You'll get yourself killed. That's what you'll do.
Well, I got to try, and it's as simple as that. I'll take one of the pack horses and ride back to town.
Casey stood up and came over to Preacher. She laid a hand on his arm.
That sounds awfully risky to me. Can't you stay here with us? I don't want anything to happen to you. You can get another horse and some guns somewhere else, can't you?
You're wasting your time, darling. I never seen anybody get Preacher to change his mind once he's got it made up. He's just about the stubbornest old cuss you'll ever see.
That's because I'm right more often than not.
Jessie got to her feet then and came over to Preacher, standing on his other side. She put a hand on his arm as well.
Are you sure that Cassandra and I can't change your mind, Preacher? We could give you plenty of good reasons to stay here tonight.
Good God Almighty.
Oh, hush, Uncle Dan. Now look, you gals make it mighty tempting, but like Uncle Dan said, my mind's made up. I'll be back by morning, and then we'll figure out what to do next.
Best sing out when you get close to camp. My nerves is going to be a mite on edge, knowing that Beaumont's out there with a powerful grudge against you three.
Preacher untied one of the pack horses. He didn't have a saddle, and he wouldn't take Uncle Dan's, but he had grown up riding bareback and knew he wouldn't have any trouble doing so now. The horse was not used to having a rider and was a little skittish at first. The Preacher had fashioned a hackamore out of rope, and soon he had the animal under control.
I'll see y'all in the morning. Yeah!
The lights of the settlement glittered in front of him. He circled to the south to come at it from that direction. The Preacher fully expected Beaumont to have guards posted at his house. Now that Beaumont knew the threat against him had originated within his own organization, he wasn't going to trust anybody. He'd be on the alert for another attack. Knowing now that Preacher had been posing as Jim Donnelly, Beaumont might expect them to show up to get horse. Of course, that was exactly what Preacher intended to do. He left the pack horse tied loosely in some trees about a half a mile south of town. If he got back later to reclaim the animal, that would be fine. And if not, the horse wouldn't have much trouble getting free later on and undoubtedly would wander into town where someone would find it and give it a home. Preacher was willing to lose the pack horse in return for his gray stallion if it did come to that. Sticking to the shadows, Preacher approached Beaumont's house on foot. This sedate residential neighborhood was too far from downtown and the riverfront for any of the raucous sounds originating in those areas to penetrate. To all appearances, it was a quiet, peaceful night in these parts. Preacher's instincts told him that was not the case. Somewhere out there were armed men who wanted him dead. He came at the barn from the rear, moving slowly and carefully. When he was about 50 yards from the building, he stopped. Listened for a cough or any other faint sound a guard might make. His eyes searched the shadows for any trace of movement. The sound came from the shadows near the rear of the barn.
A sentry changing position.
Preacher took his time about it. 5 minutes later, he was within arm's reach of the man who stood near the barn door with a rifle cradled in his arms. Preacher figured there might be more men inside. He looked up. The rear door into the hayloft was closed, but he knew it had only a simple latch on the inside. If he could get up there, he could slide his knife through the gap around the door and lift the latch. A barrel sat against the rear wall. Preacher reached down, pulled the belt off the man he had killed, and climbed onto the barrel. Preacher held onto one end of the belt and tossed it upward toward the beam that protruded from the wall just above the loft door. It wrapped around on the first try. From there, it was a simple matter to climb up the door and work the latch open just as he had thought. A moment later, Preacher was inside the deep darkness of the loft, stretched out on the hay. Carefully, he crawled to the edge of the loft and peered over it. No lights burned inside the barn. Preacher relied on his senses and his instincts to tell him where the men were. He pinpointed three of them. One just inside the door, one beside the stall where a horse was, and a third man near the ladder that led down from the loft. Preacher's eyes had adjusted to the darkness so that he was just barely able to make out the shape of the third man only a few feet beneath him. Preacher fashioned a loop from one end of the belt. He stretched out on his belly at the edge of the loft and studied the guard just below him. The fellow wore a cap of some sort rather than a wide-brimmed hat, which was a stroke of good fortune. That guard was completely taken by surprise when the loop dropped over his head and jerked tight around his neck. The muscles in Preacher's arms and shoulders bunched as he lifted the man's weight off the floor. Unfortunately, the man dropped his rifle. The other two guards ran toward the dangling man.
Garrison, what's wrong?
Preacher let go of the belt. An instant later, Preacher leaped off the edge of the loft and plummeted down to crash into one of the guards who had just run up. Preacher rolled over and surged back to his feet just in time for the third man to tackle him. Both of them went down, but Preacher twisted as he fell and managed to land on top. Then Preacher was back on his feet again. The ruckus hadn't made that much noise, and all three of the guards inside the stable were out of action for the moment. Preacher hurried into Horse's stall and slapped blanket and saddle on the stallion with swift, efficient movements. He led Horse out of the stall and dropped the reins, knowing the animal would stand there patiently. Then Preacher felt around until he found the rifles the guards had dropped. He took their pistols, too, shoving the weapons behind his belt. He was armed for bear now, or for a damn war. Preacher went to the double doors at the front of the stable and lifted the bar that held them closed. Then he swung up into the saddle and drew two of the four pistols. Horse hit the doors, bursting out into the open area between the stable and the back of Beaumont's house. From the corner of his eye, Preacher spotted a man running toward him. Preacher took aim at the guard.
Beaumont! I'm coming for you, Beaumont, you goddamn coward! I'm gonna skin you alive!
Preacher leaned forward in the saddle and let Horse run.
Horse, if that didn't get Beaumont to come after me, ain't nothing with
it. Preacher headed south again, then circled wide to the west before heading for Uncle Dan's camp. He didn't think Beaumont would have been able to mount a pursuit quickly enough to come after him tonight, but he wanted to be sure he didn't lead any pursuit back to the place where he had left Jesse and Casey. Once they were safely well away from St. Louis, then everything would be different. Then he would want Beaumont on his trail until he was ready to make his final move. It was long after midnight by the time Preacher approached the grove of trees.
Hello to camp!
Come ahead, Preacher!
When Preacher reached the camp deep in the trees and swung down from Horse's back, Jesse and Casey practically swarmed him.
Are you all right?
You're not hurt.
No, I'm fine. And I got this stallion of mine back, too.
You bet not the pack horses you rode into town, I see.
Well, now, I really didn't want to take the time to go back where I left him, Uncle Dan. He'll be fine. I made sure he could get loose. Somebody will find him and get a good horse out of the deal. Any trouble out here?
Nary a bit. It's been mighty quiet here ever since you left. Except for these here ladies fretting their pretty heads off over you and wondering when you were gonna get back.
We weren't worried.
That's right. We know you can take care of yourself, Preacher.
And the rest of us, too.
So, what's the plan now?
I figure the first thing in the morning, you and the gals will head on up the Missouri. There's a Mandan village about 50 miles upstream.
I know the place. Chief name of Otter's Tail or something like that. He's the boss of the village.
Yeah, Otter's Tail's right. Him and me are old amigos. I don't reckon Beaumont would ever think to look for you there, and hell, even if he did, he'd have a hard time getting you away from that bunch. The Mandan are plumb peaceful, but that's because they choose to be. I wouldn't want to tangle with them.
Me neither. It sounds like a good plan, except for the fact that it means you'll be taking on Beaumont all by your lonesome.
And that's the way I want it. I can go after him better if I'm not having to worry about the three of you.
What about us worrying about you?
There's no need for you to do that. I'm gonna be fine. I don't plan on taking any foolish chances. I'm gonna lead Beaumont out west, where the odds will all be on my side.
If he cooperates and chases you his own self.
After the salt I rubbed in his wounds tonight, I got a hunch that's exactly what he'll do.
Preacher told them all about his raid of Beaumont's estate to reclaim Horse.
And if that don't do the trick, I'll gig him again.
You mean you'll go back to St. Louis?
You're damn right.
You'll be taking a terrible chance every time you do.
And that's a risk I'm willing to take. You ladies better turn in and get some shut-eye. It ain't but a few hours till dawn. You need to be on the trail by the time the sun comes up so you can get a good start.
What about you? You need some sleep too, don't you?
Well, I figured I'd stand guard while Uncle Dan caught a few winks.
Forget it, boy. The more decrepit I get, the less sleep it seems like I need. You get the shut-eye, Preacher, while I stand guard.
All right. I reckon it wouldn't hurt for me to get a couple hours sleep, but then you need to wake me up so you can rest a while, too. You'll be on the trail for a long time tomorrow, and you don't need to be trying that without any sleep at all.
Deal.
Preacher had left his bedroll here at the camp along with his buckskins. He crawled into his blankets now, fully expecting to fall asleep instantly as soon as he stretched out and closed his eyes. He didn't doze off right away, though, because he realized that Jessie was spreading a blanket she had gotten from their supplies on the ground next to him. Not only that, but as Casey brought over another blanket, it appeared that she intended to bed down on his other side. The idea of having a beautiful woman lying within a foot or two of him on either side had a definite effect on Preacher. He was as human as the next fella, and Jessie and Casey were both mighty pretty.
Good night, Preacher.
Good night, Preacher.
Damned if both of them gals didn't reach over and pat him on the shoulder in a friendly manner. Preacher did not doze off right away. But eventually, sleep came.
Preacher?
Preacher sat up and looked around the camp. A little silvery starlight penetrated the grove of trees, enough to show him the sleeping shapes of Jessie and Casey next to him. Preacher got to his feet quietly and moved several yards away with Uncle Dan so the two of them could talk without disturbing the women.
Anything been happening since I turned in?
Nope, everything's mighty quiet. I reckon when you rode away from St. Louis last night, you gave Beaumont the slip. You'll have to find some way to get him on your trail again, if you want to lure him away from civilization.
Well, I can damn sure find a way to do that.
Preacher picked up one of the rifles he had brought with him from Beaumont's place. Earlier, before turning in, he had made sure they were all loaded, and he had reloaded the pistols he had fired as he burst out of the stable behind Beaumont's house.
You go get some sleep, Uncle Dan. I'll wake all three of you in a couple hours, and you and the gals can get ready to hit the trail.
All right, but I don't know how well I'm gonna sleep without a couple of nubile young women to keep me nice and warm like somebody else around here.
Oh, shut up.
Uncle Dan rolled up in his blankets and was soon sleeping soundly. After a while, Casey stirred. She sat up and rubbed her eyes, then climbed slowly to her feet with the blanket still wrapped around her. She stumbled over to the log where Preacher was sitting and sank down beside him.
You're supposed to still be sleeping.
I know. And Lord knows I'm still tired enough to sleep. But we're going our separate ways in the morning, and I wanted to talk to you, Preacher.
What about?
I just wanted to say thank you.
Well, for what? Going after Beaumont?
Well, that too. Whatever you do to him, he's got it coming, in spades. I really wanted to thank you, though, for treating me the way you have.
Oh, I don't reckon I've done anything all that special.
Yes, you did. When we were together, not once did you act like I was a whore. You just treated me like a woman you liked.
Well, hell, I do like you. I think you're a mighty fine gal.
You're the first man who's treated me like that in a long time, though. Most of them, you don't want to know how most of them treat me.
Yeah, well, you're right about that.
Do you know why I asked you to call me Casey, when no one else in St. Louis does?
No. I know Jessie's mighty curious about that, too. I think maybe it hurt her feelings a mite that she didn't know nothing about it.
No, I'm sorry about that. Jessie's been good to me, as much as she could under the circumstances anyway. But you're different, Preacher. You reminded me of a boy back home. A boy used to call me Casey. The only one who ever did.
You were in love with him?
Casey nodded without saying anything.
Yeah, something happened to him.
He went off to fight in that stupid Black Hawk Hawk War a few years ago. He never came back.
Oh, he got killed in the fight?
No. He took sick with the grip and died. But if he had been home, it wouldn't have happened. I never told anybody what he called me when we were together. And I never felt the same till I met you.
I'm mighty flattered I made you feel good, Casey. If that's what I did.
Oh, don't worry. I'm not planning to marry you or anything. Although that might not be so bad. I'm afraid things have gone beyond that by now. Too far beyond. I wouldn't mind sitting here with you for a little while, though, if that would be all right.
That'll be just fine.
A smile touched Preacher's lips as Casey leaned against him and rested her head on his shoulder. By the time Preacher roused Jesse and Uncle Dan from their slumber, Casey had built up the fire and gotten the coffee on the boil.
Cassandra, I didn't know you were so domestic.
Just a farm girl at heart, remember?
They had breakfast and then packed up all their gear. Preacher went into the bushes, peeled out of the town clothes, and put on his buckskins. He felt almost like himself for the first time in weeks as he emerged from the brush and settled his hat with its wide, floppy brim on his head. If his beard was longer, everything would be back to normal again, or as normal as it could be while Shad Beaumont was still alive.
I've been thinking, what happened to Cleve?
Well, my guess is he heard what happened at your place yesterday and he's lying low. Beaumont don't know that Cleve had any part in the plans against him, and as long as Cleve keeps his mouth shut, it can stay that way. Cleve struck me as a fairly smart fella.
He is.
Then he'll know to keep quiet. Hell, he can plunk himself down at the table and do prees and play poker till this whole business is over.
I hope you're right. I'd hate for something to happen to him because he tried to help me.
A short time later, they were ready to go. Uncle Dan and the women would take the pack horse with them. Preacher planned to travel as light as possible once he started leading Beaumont on a merry chase across the prairie. Jesse and Casey both hugged Preacher tightly.
When it's over, you'll come find us?
Oh, I sure will.
And maybe you'll spend some time with us in town before you go back to the mountains?
Oh, sure, yeah.
I still think I ought to be going with you, Preacher.
Yeah, well, you got a more important job, keeping these ladies safe.
I know it. I just hate to see you having all the fun, that's all.
Are you sure you know how to find that Mandan village?
Yep, don't worry.
All right. So long, Uncle Dan.
So long, Preacher.
Preacher rode with them until they were within sight of the Missouri River. Then he reined horse to a halt, sat there watching with dog alongside him, as Uncle Dan and the two women in the buggy headed northwest. Any direction that was away from St. Louis represented safety. He lifted a hand and waved farewell, even though none of them were looking back. And then Preacher turned horse and headed towards civilization. Bloody, damnable civilization. Preacher only got about a half mile down the trail.
Son of a bitch, gunshots!
The shots were coming from the direction Uncle Dan and the two women had gone a short time earlier.
Oh, that can't be good.
Trail horse! Come on, dog!
Preacher rode hard toward the river, and as he did so, worry gnawed at his guts. He hadn't expected his friends to run into any trouble. Of course, they were far enough from town that the possibility of encountering a Pawnee or Cheyenne war party existed. And bands of white renegades sometimes roam these parts, too. Preacher topped one of the rolling hills and spotted something up ahead. A second later, he recognized it as Jesse's buggy, which now lay overturned on its side. The horse that was hitched to the vehicle was still in its traces, lying on its side, motionless. A saddle horse was a couple of hundred yards away, moving around skittishly. Preacher recognized it as Uncle Dan's mount. But he didn't see Uncle Dan or either of the two women anywhere. Possibly they'd been taken prisoner and carried off. Wherever the men who had done this had gone, he vowed to himself that he would track them down. Whoever was holed up in the bushes wasn't a very good shot. Using his knees to guide the stallion, Preacher veered horse so that the buggy provided some cover for him. Rifle in hand, he leaped from the saddle while horse was still moving and landed behind the buggy. He crouched and aimed over the top of the vehicle at the brush.
Whoever you are, you best throw out your guns and come out after him with your hands up!
Preacher, is that you?
Uncle Dan!
Preacher ran out from behind the buggy. A few fast, long-legged strides brought him to the bushes. He parted them, paying no attention to the way the branches clawed at his buckskins, and he plunged into the thicket. Preacher spotted Uncle Dan lying on the ground. He went to his knees beside the old-timer. Several dark splotches of blood on Uncle Dan's buckskins told Preacher that he'd been shot through and through. Carefully, Preacher lifted him so that he was sitting halfway up.
Well, I'm all shot to hell, Preacher.
Oh, it ain't that bad, Dan.
The hell it ain't. I'm a goner, and we both know it.
What happened?
Some fellas jumped us. They come up behind us. We tried to outrun them, but their horses was too fast, couldn't get away. I'm plumb sorry, Preacher. I put up as good a fight as I could, and so them gals, but they was too many.
Beaumont?
Yeah, he was the boss of them, and there was a fellow with him. Miss Jessie called him Cleve. Said he was a double-crossing son of a bitch.
Cleve had made it clear from the first that he had joined forces with Jesse for money and power, so it didn't come as any surprise that he had switched sides as soon as it was better for him to do so. Preacher understood that, but it didn't make him hate Cleve any less.
Oh, things is all busted up inside me. I took a bad tumble from my horse just about the time that buggy turned over. I managed to crawl out into this here thicket and throw some lead at the sons of bitches. But I was already hurt, and they winged me a few times to boot, and reckon they figured I was done for. And they was right. I must passed out for a little spell. Came to and heard a horse. I wasn't thinking too straight. I shoved my rifle out and squeezed off a shot. That was you coming, weren't it, Preacher? I didn't hit you, did I?
No, don't you worry about that. I'm fine. Now, I need to get you out of these bushes.
Don't waste the time on me. You best get after Beaumont. After they stopped shooting, he yelled at me. Said if I was still alive to tell you that he'd be waiting for you at his place. And if you want to see Jesse and Casey alive again, you find Beaumont and save them gals. And when you settle the score with Beaumont, you'll be settling up for me and for Pete, too.
I'll see you on the other side one of these days, old-timer.
Preacher gently closed the lifeless, staring eyes. He lowered Uncle Dan carefully to the ground and left the thicket. One of the wheels on the buggy had shattered when it overturned. He looked at the broken spokes and picked out one that he thought could be used as a shovel. Then he got a blanket from his pack and went back into the brush to wrap the old-timer's body in it. Preacher lifted Uncle Dan's body onto horse's back and tied it in place. Then he led the stallion along the river until he found a suitable spot. A high, tree-shaded hill with a good view of the valley and a broad stream flowing through it.
Uncle Dan, I know you ought to be buried in the Rockies. They're a tad too far away now. This is gonna have to do.
Using the broken spoke, Preacher began digging. It was hard work, and as the day grew warmer, sweat sprang out on his face. He kept at it until he had a nice deep grave. Then he lowered Uncle Dan's body into the hole he covered.
Lord, you know I ain't much for speechifying. And even though they call me preacher, you and me never been all that close. But I'm gonna say this. I don't reckon there's anybody in this world who appreciates the mountains and the streams and the prairie you made more than I do. And if that counts for anything with you, I'd ask you to look kindly on this old fellow who just showed up on your doorstep a while ago. He's one of the finest men I ever knowed. And if you can find a fiddle up there in heaven for him to play, he'll have the angels dancing a jig before you know it. I reckon that's all I got to say. So I'll wrap this up the way the real preachers do and just say, amen.
Preacher put his hat on and turned away from the mound of dirt that marked the final resting place of Uncle Dan Sullivan. He took hold of horse's reins and swung up into the saddle. He motioned for Dog to follow him as he hitched the stallion into motion. Preacher started at an easy lope toward St. Louis. There was no need to hurry now. It was all over except for the rest of the killing. That would come later, once night had fallen. It looked like every lamp and shed Beaumont's house was lit. Yellow light glowed from all the windows. From the roof of a building a couple of blocks away, Preacher used the spyglass he had taken from his pack to study the place. He didn't see anybody moving. But he was confident that Beaumont was in there, and so were Jesse and Casey. Also, he had no doubt that a dozen or more well-armed men were hidden around the house just waiting for him to show up. Not that they would kill him if he waltzed up there, he knew that. Their orders would be to take him prisoner, not to slay him. Beaumont would want the pleasure of killing him. Of course, if Preacher attacked openly and forced the men to gun him down, Beaumont probably wouldn't lose too much sleep over that. He'd wanted Preacher dead for a long time, and if that was the way things played out, Preacher was sure that Beaumont could live with it. And then, once Preacher was gone, Beaumont could take his time with the two women. Slowly, Preacher moved the spyglass now, checking each window in turn, trying to see if he could make out what was going on inside. All the curtains on the ground floor were pulled tightly shut, and the windows themselves were closed. But that wasn't the case on the second floor. Some of those windows were open for ventilation, and the night breeze stirred the curtains inside the rooms, creating occasional gaps through which Preacher caught glimpses of what was inside. After almost an hour, he stiffened as he saw what appeared to be a flash of fair hair.
Casey.
Preacher fixed all his attention on that particular window and waited for another gust of wind to move the curtains. He would wait all damn night if he had to. He wasn't going to strike until he was good and ready. Time went by, and then the curtains parted briefly. And this time, he saw a large shape move past the window. Beaumont was in there with Casey. Preacher didn't know that for a fact, but his instincts told him it was true. Jesse was probably in the same room. Beaumont would want to keep them together so that it would be easier for him to keep an eye on them. Suddenly, curtains were thrust open, taking Preacher by surprise. As he squinted through the spyglass, he saw the reason why. Beaumont had moved a couple of straight back chairs up close to the big window. Jesse and Casey sat in those chairs. From the way their arms were pulled back, Preacher knew their hands were tied behind them. Beaumont was using them as bait, all right, and he was making damn sure they were right out there where Preacher couldn't help but see them. Beaumont's nerves were probably getting tired of the waiting. He wanted to goad Preacher into action. Preacher's jaw tightened as he studied the faces of the two women through the glass.
You're going to hell, Shed Beaumont. And I'll take you there myself if I have to.
Jesse and Casey had been beaten. Preacher could see the blood and bruises on their faces. If Beaumont had stepped into view at that moment, Preacher would have put a rifle ball through the bastard's head and been done with it. He wished he had done that a couple of weeks earlier. Uncle Dan would probably still be alive if he had. Preacher climbed down into the alley again. He went to the back door of the emporium and used his knife to bust the lock. Preacher went inside, and his eyes were accustomed enough to the darkness by now that he was able to find his way around the store and locate the things he needed. He made a bundle out of some burlap, slung it over his shoulder, and left some money on the counter to pay for what he had taken. He climbed back up on the roof. Preacher was two blocks away from Beaumont's house. That was a pretty far distance for what he had in mind, but he was confident the bow he had fashioned during the day would send the arrows that far. He had made half a dozen arrows, not bothering with trying to carve flint heads for them. Now he dumped them out of the makeshift quiver he had used to carry them and tore strips off the bolt of cloth he had taken from the store. He wrapped the strips around the ends of the arrows. Once he had done that, he dipped each cloth-wrapped arrowhead in the keg of pitch he had found in the store as well. Preacher tore up some brown paper he had brought from below, making a pile of it in a metal bowl that would contain the fire. Then he took out his flint and steel and struck sparks with them. Preacher stood up and knocked one of the arrows to the bow. He held the pitch-soaked head of the shaft in the flames until it caught and began to blaze. The burning shaft arced through the darkness. Preacher watched it soar through the air and then curve downward to land on the opposite end of the roof from the room where Jesse and Casey were being held prisoner. Even though Preacher was watching the flight of that flame and arrow, by the time it landed, he had set another one ablaze. Preacher knew he had the range now, so he didn't even watch this one. He just knocked the next arrow and let it fly. Then again, and again, and again. By the time the sixth and final arrow landed on the roof of the big house, the flames had caught hold. At Beaumont's house, men leaped out of their hiding places and hurried toward the place. Most people feared fire worse than anything else, and with damn good reason. Preacher dropped the bow and snatched up his rifle. He aimed at one of the lighted windows, and when one of Beaumont's men was unlucky enough to pause between him and the window, Preacher pulled the trigger. The man dropped like a rock as the heavy lead ball tore through him. Preacher downed another man the same way. Preacher glanced at the fire, saw it spreading across the roof, and figured he could risk taking the time for another shot or two. That was all Preacher could stand. He had to get down there. He couldn't wait any longer. He left the empty rifle where it was, ran to the front of the building and clambered out onto the awning and over the boardwalk, hung from it, and then dropped to the street. When Preacher reached the lawn in front of Beaumont's house, he looked around to see if Jesse and Casey had been brought outside already. Failing to spot them anywhere, he looked up instead. Smoke billowed from the burning roof and coiled around the house, but it didn't obscure the window where he had seen the women earlier. He grimaced as he saw that they were still there, tied to the chairs. That meant he had to get inside the house to free them. The mountain man headed for the front door as people started trying to form a bucket brigade stretching back to the nearest well. They would fail in that effort. Preacher knew it. The fire was too well entrenched on the roof now. The best the citizens could do was to keep the blaze from spreading. Preacher wished him luck with that, but he couldn't stop to help him. He bounded toward the porch. A knot of Beaumont's men emerged from the house just as Preacher reached the steps. They had been warned to look out for him, and they probably had a good description of him thanks to Cleve.
Hey, it's him! Preacher!
They grabbed for their guns, but Preacher's pistols were already coming up. At this distance, the double-shotted loads wreaked havoc, blowing holes in three of the men and driving them off their feet. A fourth man fell to his knees. That left two men blocking the door, and Preacher struck before they could bring their guns to bear. He leaped out onto the porch and lashed out right and left with the empty pistols. Preacher hurtled over the guards' bodies and into the house. He'd spent a lot of time here over the past couple of weeks, so he knew where he was going. The curving staircase was right in front of him. He stuck the empty pistols behind his belt and drew the remaining pair as he started up the stairs, taking them two and three at a time. Cleve appeared at the top of the stairs, clutching a shotgun.
Surprise, Preacher!
Cleve had paid the ultimate price for his betrayal. Preacher ran past the dead man and headed for the room where Jesse and Casey were being held prisoner. He knew Beaumont would be there, and maybe some of Beaumont's killers as well. No matter what the odds, Preacher intended to prevail. It was time for Beaumont to die. Suddenly, another figure stepped into the hallway in front of him, blocking his path. This man held a shotgun too, and Preacher barely had time to recognize him as Lorenzo before the twin barrels were leveled at him.
Get down, boy!
Preacher looked back over his shoulder and saw that the lead pellets had scythed into three men who'd been pursuing him, splattering them in a bloody mess all over the second floor hallway.
You come to rescue them gals?
That's right.
And to kill Beaumont?
Yeah, you're not gonna try to stop me, are you, Lorenzo?
Stop you? Hell, boy, I'm gonna cover your back. Probably nobody ever told you, but Brutus was my son.
Oh, damn. I'm sorry about what happened to him.
You just go finish it with Beaumont. That son of a bitch been lording it over folks for too damn long. I won't let nobody sneak up behind you.
Preacher gave the man's shoulder a quick squeeze and then started along the hall toward the door of the room in which Jesse and Casey were being held prisoner. He was confident that Chad Beaumont was on the other side of that door, waiting for him. Preacher spun to the side, away from the opening. He stood to the side with a pistol leveled at the door. Coils of smoke curled through the hallway.
Preacher! Preacher, I know you're out there! You'd better get in here, or I'm gonna kill one of these sluts! I just slashed Cassandra's face! The next one goes right across her throat!
All right, Beaumont! I'm coming in!
Empty-handed!
Preacher lowered the hammer on his pistol and stuck it behind his belt. With his hands open and empty at shoulder level, he stepped into the doorway. As he did, flames began to lick at the ceiling in the corridor. Beaumont stood there between the chairs where the women were tied. His clothes were disheveled, and his eyes were wide with rage and insane hatred. He didn't look much like the suave, wealthy, powerful man he had been before Preacher came back to St. Louis now. Beaumont had a knife in his left hand, a pistol in his right. He grinned at Preacher as he raised the gun.
You're an uneducated fool. I'm gonna kill you and kill these two bitches of yours. I may even leave them here to burn to death, knowing that their doom will pay you back for all the trouble you've caused me, Preacher.
You sure you ain't gonna talk us all to death instead?
Preacher glanced at Jesse and Casey. Both women had been beaten, and blood ran from an ugly cut on Casey's cheek. The Preacher saw anger and defiance and determination still blazing in their eyes, so he was not surprised by what happened next. Both women threw themselves at Beaumont, chairs and all. They crashed into his thighs and sent him toppling forward just as he pulled the trigger. Preacher leaped forward and swung his leg, kicking the knife out of Beaumont's other hand. Then Preacher backed off and drew the pistol that was still loaded.
Get up, Beaumont.
Get up and get away from the women.
Beaumont pushed himself onto hands and knees and then climbed to his feet. He backed away from where Jesse and Casey lay on the floor, still tied to the overturned chairs. The smoke in the room was getting thicker all the time.
We best be getting out of here, boy. This place is gonna be coming down before you know it.
Yeah. Cut the women loose, Lorenzo. See that they get out of the house, and just don't get between me and Beaumont while you're doing it.
Lorenzo hurried to do as Preacher said. He cut Jesse's bonds first, then Casey's.
Why are you helping him, you uppity nigger? You work for me.
So did my son. His name was Brutus. You knew that. And you ain't even said you sorry for what happened to him.
Sorry? Why should I be sorry? None of you matter. He's just a bunch of niggers and whores and bumpkins. You're nothing compared to me, you hear? Nothing!
Well, then, it's nothing that brought you down, boss.
Get him out of here, Lorenzo!
Casey caught a Preacher's arm.
What about you, Preacher? You have to come, too.
She's right. You have to come with us, Preacher.
I'll be along directly, soon as I'm finished here.
Come on, ladies. We have to go. Come on.
The women did not want to go, but Lorenzo succeeded in hustling them out of the room.
What are you gonna do now? Give me a gun so we can fight a duel? Let me have my knife back so we can settle this with cold steel.
Preacher peered over the barrel of his pistol at Beaumont, locking eyes with the man, thinking of Uncle Dan and Brutus and everyone else who had died.
I'm gonna do what I should have done a couple of weeks ago, you bastard.
Preacher left the body where it fell. The burning mansion could serve as a suitable funeral pyre for Shad Beaumont. It was more than the man actually deserved anyway. His corpse should have been tossed into the mud for the pigs. The preacher was too damn tired to do anything but turn and walk out of the place burning down behind him. Casey, Jesse, and Lorenzo were waiting for him outside. The two women ran to him and threw their arms around him.
Oh.
As good as that hug felt, Preacher knew they couldn't afford to waste any time.
Oh, let's get out of here while everybody still ain't quite sure what's going on.
The group slipped away into the shadows, leaving the citizenry of St. Louis behind them, along with Beaumont's men, who weren't even aware yet that their employer was never coming out of that inferno. A couple of blocks away, they found Beaumont's carriage with the team hitched to it. Some of Beaumont's men must have driven it out of the carriage house to save it in case the fire spread that far. Nobody was around at the moment, so Lorenzo opened the door and grinned as he motioned for Preacher, Jesse, and Casey to climb inside.
Ladies, gentlemen.
Oh, that ain't fitting.
It damn sure is. Now get in there, boy, and let's light a shuck out of here.
All right.
Preacher shook his head, but he didn't argue anymore. He just climbed into the carriage after Jesse and Casey. Lorenzo closed the door, scrambled up to the driver's seat, took up the reins. A moment later, the carriage was rolling away. And that was how it came to be parked on a hillside several miles north of town the next morning, overlooking the Mississippi River. Preacher had directed Lorenzo to the spot where he had left horse and dog when he started downriver on the little raft so he could pick up his two old trail partners. Then they had found the spot and camped. Jesse was preparing some breakfast from the supplies Preacher had been planning on taking with him as he headed west with Beaumont in pursuit. Things hadn't worked out that way, of course, but Beaumont was dead and the two women were safe. Preacher knew he was going to miss Uncle Dan, though, and he was sure Lorenzo and Miss Jessie would miss Brutus. Preacher cleaned the wound on Casey's cheek as best he could.
That's going to need a sawbones to sew it up or it's going to leave a scar.
I'm not going back to St. Louis, and I don't care if there's a scar. Do you, Preacher?
Why would it matter to me?
Because I'm coming with you.
I'm coming, too. I always had a hankering to see some real mountains.
Oh, now wait just a doggone minute. Now what makes you think the Rockies are any place for a...
A whore?
And a nigger.
Well, hell's fire, I was gonna say a gal and a carriage driver. I don't give a damn about them other things, and you two know it.
Yeah, I reckon. But I've been around horses all my life. I'll be all right on the frontier.
And I was raised on a farm, remember? I'm used to being outdoors. At least there was a time I was, and I'd like to experience that again.
Well, now, if that don't beat all.
Preacher turned to Jesse.
I suppose you want to come along and see the mountains, too.
Jesse smiled up at him from where she was frying some bacon over the fire.
Actually, no. It's been too long since I lived on a farm. I'm afraid I'm a city girl now.
Oh, you can't mean to go back to St. Louis. Too many folks there know you were plotting against Beaumont. Somebody's going to take over where he left off, you know, and whoever it is might consider you a threat.
That's why I'm going to take one of those horses, ride around St. Louis, and catch a ride on a riverboat somewhere downstream. I've always wanted to see New Orleans. I think I'll do just fine there.
You know, I got a hunch you're right about that.
And that way Casey and Lorenzo can have two of the other horses, and you can use the fourth one as a pack animal. See how neatly that works out?
Yes, but what do we do with the carriage? Just leave it here?
Preacher's eyes narrowed as he studied the slope leading down to the river. It was pretty steep, and the bank dropped off sharply to the water.
I got me an idea. The others agreed, and after breakfast, they unhitched the four horses that would now carry them on their separate ways. Jesse to the south, Preacher, Casey, and Lorenzo to the west. The carriage was empty. Preacher took the brake off and got behind the vehicle. The others joined him.
Put your shoulders into it.
The heavy carriage began to move, slowly at first, and then faster as its weight began to work against it. Gravity took over and the carriage started rolling down the hill. Preacher and his companions trotting after it for a second, keeping it going. Then they stopped and stepped back to watch as the vehicle's momentum made it pick up speed as it headed for the river. The carriage wound up on its side, floating slowly out of sight around a bend in the river.
There goes the last of Shad Beaumont.
Good riddance.
Oh, people in St. Louis are going to be mighty puzzled when they see it floating past, though.
It'll make a good story. And folks do like a good story.
The First Mountain Man 16, Preacher 5, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2010, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, Christopher Graybill, Colleen Delaney, Richard Rowan, Ken Jackson, Ren Casey, Dylan Lynch, Terrence Acer, Lily Beacon, Michael Glenn, Tim Getman, James Lewis, Thomas Penny, Johann Detweiler, and Annette Savard. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Greg Reinfeld and Temeskin Wolf. Graphic audio sound design by Temeskin Wolf. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. Additional music composed and performed by Johann Detweiler and Brian Pack. If you enjoyed Preacher's Fire, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com and be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles, and Sidewinder series. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. You'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. We appreciate it.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Cadet Vada?
Sir!
You are a disgrace to the service.
Sir?
Many, many people want your head on a pike. I'm going to see your resignation on my desk by 1500 hours this afternoon.
I, Kailara Evangeline Dominique Vada, hereby resign from the Academy for personal reasons.
Now we have to figure out what to do with
you. Dad, listen.
We're sending you out to the Rift with a ship going to salvage. You're taking the Glennis Jones to Lastway.
You're making me captain?
Courage, Kai. You've got what you need to start a good life. Go.
What if I can make enough in trade to buy Glennis and fix her up and own my own ship?
I need to talk to you.
What's up?
We have a contract to deliver a cargo of agricultural machinery to Belinta. What?
Kai. We wondered how long it'd take.
Trade and profit, right? Well, let's take a look at this contract you signed. We have to buy the goods up front?
Of course. I thought Sabine Prime. Sabine has several manufacturers of the kind of equipment they want.
It's worth trying.
Mandatory repairs. We have to replace that sealed unit.
Secundus has threatened to blockade Prime.
Prime and Secundus are moving towards war this time.
Sabine's system is now cut off from regular communication with the rest of the universe.
We have a problem. Warships. Get us away from the station, Riel.
Glennis Jones, acknowledge.
Captain Vada, Glennis Jones.
Glennis Jones, this is the Mackenzie Military Assistance Corporation ship Victor. You will proceed alone down the escape passage to the lock. You will operate the lock for our boarding personnel. You will obey the orders of their commanding officer. If you disobey, your ship is toast. Got that?
You're Captain Vada?
Yes.
Start back up the passage. Tell him to sit down on the deck, hands on knees.
Where's Skeldon?
He was here a second ago.
Skeldon!
Pit to Victor. Send me a medic. Live, damn it.
From Elizabeth Moon, creator of the Serrano Legacy, a compelling new sci-fi series, Vata's War. Book 1, Trading in Danger, Part 1, in Graphic Audio. If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.